Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country and the world. This is the show that sweeps every Saturday. It's kind of like a Saturday in the park. I really enjoy producing it for this gentleman. Unbelievable. A mentor, a friend, and a brother to me. Dr. Greg Roscoe out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, in Los Angeles, producing it, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, an hour goes by quick. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I put that podium in place, hand off the mic, more of him, less of me, Doc the Threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And boy, another great guest you're bringing in this show of yours that keeps picking up steam each and every week.
Mark, thank you very much. The introduction is just excellent. And I'd like to welcome our audience today, as well as our guest, Susan Oromoto. I'm doing well. You know, our practice is doing well. We're getting a lot of interest in our medical show, you know, Doc Talk, through emails. Our phone is even getting callers coming in from all over the country with questions, just interestingly. Things are going well. Pittsburgh is still beautiful, a little muggy today. And people can get a hold of me, Mark, at GJRMD308@outlook.com. You know, today's topic is one of a lot of interest, maybe somewhat underdiagnosed. Maybe we're missing these things in our patients. The topic has to kind of border on a little bit of depression, but also burnout. And, you know, our workplace is changing, you know, with regard to having enough people in the workforce to do the jobs that need done. Even though we try to go ahead and streamline our processes, still need, you know, customer service. We still need that human touch. With those things not happening, that we don't have enough people there, our people that are in the workforce, especially in healthcare, we're seeing a lot of burnout. And, you know, it's one of those things that is a sign of the times. And with regard to the emails that I've been receiving a little bit about this emotional topic, I thought it was good to bring it up. Let's talk about burnout. And our guest, Susan Oromoto, a lot of credentials. She's a board-certified holistic health practitioner. She also is a certified wellness coach. Does a lot of psychological behavior and tremendous results. And we're going to get her on momentarily. Susan, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much, you know, for coming on the show so early, a far different time zone, you and Mark. But thank you again. And, you know, Susan, I'd like to hear about your history. But, you know, overall, you do deal with people, women maybe more than men, in handling anxiety, stress, self-doubt, people that aren't realizing their dreams. They've lost their confidence. You know, in talking about that, that kind of, I found, is a little bit of an overlay with burnout, and especially burnout in the workplace. Are you thinking along those same lines, Susan?
Oh, absolutely. I support people that are experiencing burnout, and I will tell you, Greg, that it's absolutely been on the rise. The number of people that I see has increased, especially over the last 2 to 3 years since COVID.
Wow, since COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, like 89% of adults in the U.S. have experienced burnout in the past year. That's how prevalent it is.
That's tremendous. That is tremendous.
And yeah.
Susan,
and
go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead with your question.
I was just going on saying, okay, we have, you know, these people that seem to be experiencing this burnout. And, you know, as far as if I can just elaborate a little bit, Susan, because we want to know, how do people know they have a problem? How do they know to call you? You know, when we talk about, you know, if you go into the literature, you go into the research, you know, we talk about the emotional signs that people can display, you know, some sense of failure, self-doubt, helpless, trapped, defeated. They feel somewhat detached. They feel alone. They've lost their motivation. I'm just reading from some of the literature here from the Mayo Clinic. You know, they get very cynical, very negative. They have decreased satisfaction with their work, their sense of accomplishment. They tend to have terrible family relationships. Is that what you're seeing in your practice?
Yeah, it's absolutely what we're seeing. So just to add on, everything that you said is spot on, and just to add to that, so burnout's typically brought on by excessive amount of stress that occurs over a long duration of time. And so some of the signs and symptoms of burnout, I like to think about it and break it down into like three categories, and some of them you've already stated. So if we were to start with the physical, right? So if you're feeling exhausted and drained most of the time, then that's an indication of burnout, as well as if you experience like headaches or muscle aches, that's also a sign. And because that stress associated with the burnout can affect your immune system, you might also notice that you're getting sick more frequently, right? You're coming down with more colds or the flus than maybe normally in the past. Other physical things are changes in your sleep and eating pattern, right? And it can go either way. You're either sleeping more excessively or eating more excessively or less than normal. So those are some of the physical signs.
And what about absences at work? Are these people missing work more frequently, taking more days off, Susan?
Oh, absolutely. So that's that other category of behavior, right? So some of the signs of behavior are that, yeah, you do forego responsibilities or procrastinate more on things that perhaps previously you enjoyed or had the energy for. So calling in sick from work, unable to, you know, even enjoy maybe hobbies or things that you had enjoyed in the past. Those are also behavioral indications, and you might isolate yourself more. You know, you don't want to spend time with friends and family, perhaps like as you used to before. And, you know, you might be a little bit more short-tempered, right? You're more irritable.
Yes.
And you take your frustrations out on others. So burnout has an impact on the individual, and it also impacts, you know, their relationships and the people around them as well.
And, you know, along those same lines, Susan, you know, it affects their work performance, but also for the organization, it may have an effect on their client base as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I cannot think of a thing where burnout doesn't have the potential to affect the individual and everything around them. And Greg, you know, what I also wanted to note too and acknowledge is, you know, even though burnout is known to be a workplace phenomenon, it can actually happen to anyone who feels overworked and undervalued, and this extends out to caregivers. So if you're working in the home, either taking care of an aging parent or children, burnout can occur, and as well as students. I work with a lot of students on college campuses who have intense and heavy class loads, plus they're holding down a job, and they're experiencing burnout as well. So it has broad-reaching effects.
And, you know, as far as maybe our underlying motivation here, this driver, this negative driver, is it stress? Is stress the negative driver here that can affect our students, our healthcare providers, our people in the workplace? Is that kind of the one activity that causes us to have more problems today?
Yeah, for sure. Stress is the thing that creates and contributes to burnout. But if we were to talk about that stress for a moment, it's not solely caused, that stress, by someone's external situation, like their work environment. I think it's important to recognize that other factors can contribute to burnout too, like someone's mindset, you know, their perception of the events and the situation they're in, how they see the world around them. And then lifestyle plays an important part too. It's looking at, you know, what do you do in your downtime? What does your diet and nutrition look like? So it can be a combination of environment, mindset, and lifestyle.
Wow. You know, you talk about the lifestyle. And I think, you know, in general, even outside of this realm of depression and or burnout, you know, we need to take care of our organism. You know, we need to sleep and have good sleep hygiene. You mentioned nutrition. Absolutely. You know, we need good nutrition. We've got to watch, you know, kind of a platform I've talked about on the program, you know, with regard to all the sugary drinks, you know, the donuts, the ice cream, the candy, right? We need to maybe watch those or have those on a very limited basis. And I think the words nutrition, you know, we need to keep our organism healthy. Part of that is eating, sleeping, but then we have this emotional side of it, you know, with our everyday working. So it does play together. And I think you mentioned to start with as well, you know, with regard to when we do have this burnout, this stress, that overall it affects our immune system. We do tend to maybe not be as healthy as we once were. So it's a very encompassing scenario that affects our everyday life, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you're reminding me with that to share, you know, the other kind of category of sign and symptom. We talked about physical and behavioral, but emotional as well. So it is, you know, paying attention to your thoughts. It's like there's an increased thought to failure or self-doubt associated with burnout, feeling helpless or defeated, you know, and just a loss of satisfaction and feeling more negative.
And, you know, this probably is a very, I'll use the word insidious symptom. It's not something that one day you have it, one day you don't. It's probably a slow progression of these emotional factors kind of creeping up on us, correct? And right? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to agree with you and add, you know, absolutely. And because it's a slow creep, one of the most important things to deal with it is really to be aware and pay attention to the signs that we're talking about and how you're feeling, because the sooner that you can get away with it, if you can learn to manage your stress before it transforms into burnout, you're just going to be able to deal with it a lot more easily.
Excellent. You know, as far as our audience and as far as our everyday population, how do you think one should become educated to what's going on in their lives? You know, if they're starting to have this fatigue, they're unhappy, they need to look around in their lives, correct, and to take an inventory of what's going on, because it tends to get worse if you don't do anything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is that noticing and paying attention to what's happening with you and to you. It's noticing if your behaviors have changed, like we talked about, and that puts you in a more powerful position to be able to do things about it. And would it be helpful if we talked about some things, some, you know, very quick things, I think, that one can do once they notice that they're feeling this way? Fantastic.
Well,
you know,
yes, we can talk about treatment, and let's not get the treatment yet on symptoms a little bit, and then some of the consequences of this, if you don't mind, because I think go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That's all. Yeah, we'll keep our audience in suspense, Susan. We'll go ahead. We'll let them know how you solve this, but let's tell them what to look for. You know, what are the elements here? And I think, you know, that was kind of what I wanted to do this first half hour, is to talk about, well, what can or what do people experience? And, you know, I think you had alluded to several. And, again, the ones that I have found also, and maybe you'll agree, maybe you won't, you know, overall, if people are becoming very cynical or critical of people at their workplace, you know, if they drag themselves to work or to family activities, they have trouble getting things started. You know, they become, I think you had mentioned about, very irritable, very impatient with their children, their spouse, even with clients at work. They seem not to have a lot of energy, and they've lost this drive for production. They have inability to concentrate. They've lost the satisfaction of doing a good job, of being successful. They've kind of lost their way in life here, their goals. Sometimes we find these people would use, of course, food, drugs, alcohol to maybe relieve some of these feelings. Sleeping habits, you know, have changed. So I'll put it in your lap. And do you find these are the things that you do deal with when people come to you?
Yes, absolutely. All of those things. And what I would love to add to all of that important information is, you know, we've been talking about how burnout is brought on by excessive amount of stress over a long period of time. And with the people that I work with, they're in this period where they realize that it's stress, but then, you know, they're thinking, I can handle this on my own, and it transitions to that burnout. So if we can, let's talk about a little bit about the differences of excessive stress versus burnout.
Excellent.
Because they're not the same thing. So the difference is, the biggest difference is that stressed people can experience all of those signs and symptoms that we've been talking about, Greg, except they may feel like they're drowning in their responsibilities and with overload with work, but they can still imagine that if they can just get things under control, right, or maybe organize and prioritize a little bit, that they'll feel better. So in other words, people experiencing excessive stress, they see a way out. They can imagine it. Whereas, you know, people experiencing burnout, they don't see any hope of things getting better.
Well,
they struggle to even imagine a way out. They feel helpless and completely spent.
So
that's
more
an
hopeless
thing
than that burnout.
It absolutely is. So that's a distinction to just kind of, again, you know, check in with yourself and reflect on, how am I feeling? How am I viewing the situation? And if you are feeling more hopeless and spent, then it likely is burnout.
Well, and, you know, Susan, say with your professional practice, you know, you were in the corporate world for quite a few years, correct? And then you went on, right? Tell us about you. Tell us about what you did, how your life changed, and how you got into this holistic practitioning.
Oh, thank you so much for asking, because it's so near and dear to my heart. Yeah, so even though even though now I'm in the best emotional health of my life, like you mentioned, for 25 years, I struggled with, you know, debilitating anxiety and, quite honestly, self-doubt. And there, you know, there's overlays of stress with that, for sure. And I did experience many bouts of burnout myself. So, held me back.
Were you in the healthcare industry at that time or another profession?
Oh, I was in another profession. I actually was in the corporate business world for, you know, over 25 years in that world. So I know what it's like struggling with all of these emotional, you know, struggles. I didn't have the energy or the confidence, for that matter, to help myself, right, to move myself along. I felt exhausted and stuck.
Sure.
And quite honestly, many of these symptoms that we're talking about now, just quite honestly defeated. You know, and eventually I hit a tipping point because it became so intense. And so I was faced with a choice. You know, I could either get support and learn to manage emotions and conquer these self-limiting thoughts, right, or continue on in that stressful life. And of course, and I'm very thankful that I made the decision to get help.
And, you know, Susan, did that corporate world you were in, when you were, you know, had this unhappiness, and again, you know, you were experiencing all these symptoms, did it affect your personal life and your health as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it affected my personal life. You know, I very much believe that these emotions led to, you know, struggles in my personal relationships. It contributed to a divorce. So I went through a divorce. I became a single parent. And so those responsibilities just kind of continued to pile on and overlay, you know, to the stress and the anxiety that I was already experiencing. And it, quite honestly, it eroded my physical health. And I ended up a couple of times in the hospital with, you know, infections and immune issues that had a mystery origin, you know, according to the doctors. So, yeah, it affected every single part of my life.
So
but what I will tell you, Yes?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say what
say how tragic that does play a role on one's life.
It does. Everyone has, you know, their challenges, and these are some of the things. And for me, and it's why I stress, have that awareness. I went along for so many years just basically ignoring it, getting so caught up in my responsibilities and my tasks and prioritizing that over my own emotional and physical health, that it did lead to, you know, those events that I just shared with you. But what I also want to share is, you know, the good news is that once I decided to get the help and learn some of the methods and approaches to, you know, self-regulate my emotions, it didn't take long for me to kind of lift off that heavy emotional weight from my shoulders. Right. And I couldn't believe at that time that I had waited so long. So if I can do it, I'm just here to share that if I can do this, I'm very confident that many, many people can do this as well.
Well, you know, I think that I love the story. I love it. I love success. You know, with regard to getting in to becoming holistic, what made you get into that? You know, who were your mentors? You know, your counselors? Who did you go to for help? You know, where did you find help to be so successful?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. What inspired me to do what I'm doing today, to leave the corporate world, go back to school, right, and get the training and the certification, it really was my own experience, because I honestly thought once I went on this journey of seeking that support and adopting a different lifestyle, these were simple things, right, that I was able to incorporate, and my turnaround, my transformation happened fairly quickly. So I also don't want people to think it's going to take them years and years and years. It's not really possible. It can happen faster than you think. So, you know, the people that I turned to, I originally went to, you know, I'll call it the traditional route, and I saw a therapist, and then, which was helpful. But then I definitely knew that I needed more. And so I went and I turned to, you know, I'll call them alternative lifestyles, which I think is going to be more mainstream. It's becoming more mainstream now. I went to meditation, meditation classes, and I learned to meditate, which is an integral part of my self-care now. I've done hypnotherapy.
Right.
And so I've done a variety of modalities just to try to see what worked more powerfully for me. So not everything was a quick hit and a win, but I did discover the things that are more powerful and effective.
Fantastic. You know, how did you change your philosophy of living, you know, to change your goals, to change your life drives? You know, was that part of more education? Was that part of holistic philosophy? You know, how did you do that? Because I think that's admirable that you were able to take a situation that you had been immersed in for many, many years and then turn that around into doing something, again, good for yourself, but also good for your patients. It's a tremendous win, a tremendous win.
Oh, thank you so much, Greg, and thanks for asking. You know, I think, and I love that you mentioned knowledge, but it really, if, you know, the very beginning of it, it was making that choice. It's right, deciding,
sure.
For me, it was deciding, what am I going to prioritize? Am I going to prioritize all of the things that I'm doing, or am I going to prioritize myself because it puts me in a better position to do better, right, for others?
Yes.
So I prioritized myself, and so I started to seek information, and I was really open-minded about it. And for me, and everyone's different, I was at a place where I really wanted to find natural approaches. I wanted to do my best to stay away from, you know, pharmaceuticals and drugs. And as I say that, I'm not an opponent of that. I think it has a place. But for me, my choice was I want to approach this as naturally as possible, which is why I went and tried to discover things through talk therapy and went on and tried to discover other, you know, natural modalities.
And what I'd like to do in our second half an hour, Susan, I'd like to talk about these treatments, other modalities that are out there that you can help patients with and that you've helped patients with. What I'd like to do at this point is I'd like to go back to the studio in L.A. Mark Mancini, I believe he has questions. Mark, would you like to start the questions?
Oh, I will, my friend. And boy, what a conversation the first half has been. I can't wait to hear the second half. Let me get some of these questions. Robin, coming in from Warren, Ohio, says, when she feels down in the dumps, have you guys ever heard the term, and maybe you have, and I use this tremendously, Zen. It's a term that describes a feeling of peace, oneness, and enlightenment.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love that so much. Yes, I've not only heard of it, incorporate the elements of a Zen practice into my own life, and with some of my clients, support them with those aspects. So here's what that means to me, right? What that means to me and in my practice is, in order to achieve Zen and the practices associated with it, it really hones in on the fact that our mind and our body are interconnected. And when you address both of those things simultaneously, it's a really powerful way to improve your mental, emotional, and physical health. And so as an example of that, we talked about meditation for a moment, and I mentioned it. That's a tool that you can use in your Zen practice, right, to achieve that peace and that equilibrium within your body and your mind. So, yes,
beautiful.
I've heard of
excellent
it.
Answer.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Susan. Mark, go on.
Lance from Pensacola, Florida, basically says, when people go through divorce, it seems like women come out of it much better. At first, it's tough, but it seems like from my friends and everything, they come out of it much better than the men. The men kind of dwell on it, where the women just hit the pavement and start running.
Wow. Susan, what has been your experience?
Well, it's interesting, you know, and it varies. It depends on the person, so it's very much an independent experience. But, you know, something that came to mind as you were sharing that, Mark, is I think for women emotionally, how do I say this? When it comes to a breakup of a relationship, they actually can move on because they're able to tap into something within themselves and have a sense of independence and really leverage that for their emotional healing. And I've seen that men have a tendency to be challenged a little more in being able to tap into themselves and have that feeling of independence. They more externally rely on someone else. And so that's why, you know, I think that's what just comes to mind when I hear that statement.
Sure.
If that makes sense,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, in reality, do both men and women typically get through these divorces, maybe on a different time scale, but they're able to go on with their lives and not have it end up in some kind of a relationship failure? Do you find that to be the case?
I do, and I love that you said time scale, Greg, because it really is the destination, if we want to call it there, of getting to that emotional healing. It's something that, you know, is very attainable to both genders, but it's just the difference of time. And again, it can depend on the individual regardless of, you know, can vary by individual regardless of gender as well.
Surely. And, you know, Susan, again, Mark, I know you have more questions, but, you know, when people come to you, Susan, how do they express these problems? You know, what gets them into you? Do they come in and say that, you know, I'm just exhausted, I'm not happy, I'm not getting where I want to go, I know you've helped other people. What do they tell you? You know, what are the whys that people come in for your knowledge and expertise and treatments?
Yeah, so it's probably about 50% blend of people are coming to me on their own volition, and I'm happy to share with you, like, what, you know, triggers them to come in. But the other, before we get to that, the other 50%, I really support a group that's between the ages of 18 to, you know, 30, right? That young adult space is where my practice is focused. And so the other 50% come in because they're family members who are really, you know, who care and love them and are really noticing changes in their behavior and in their personality, their family members contact me, right,
Fantastic.
To do an introduction
yep.
with the individual, and that's why people come in. But that being said, you know, when I meet with them, they say they come in because they recognize, and it does come down to notice how you're feeling. Do the best you can to check in with yourself. They realize for themselves that they're not feeling the way that they used to feel, right? That they're feeling
sure.
sad, they're feeling sadness. They're feeling
yeah.
low energy. They recognize for themselves that they are isolating themselves more. They recognize that there are, you know, dreams, aspirations, goals that they may have in their workplace or career that they, you know, want to achieve, and they're just not mustering up the energy or the self-belief that they can achieve those things. As well as, you know, there's relationship challenges and failures as to why people
Surely.
Are coming in.
You know,
yeah.
Before we go back to Mark, you know, do you find that people that, say, tend to experience this burnout or depression or this stress or unhappiness, do they have difficulty confronting this situation, looking at their situation, you know, being able to confront that, boy, I'm just not happy? Or do you have to bring that up somehow and say, we need to look at what you're doing? It could be a very touchy situation.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, sometimes, and I was just working with a client yesterday where they know that behaviorally, you know, some of those descriptions that I shared a minute ago, they know behaviorally they're behaving in ways and experiencing emotions that they don't, that aren't comfortable,
sure.
that they are just downright painful, but they don't recognize exactly what's going on. And that's what comes out of the work that I do with my
okay.
clients, right? It's helping them discover through, you know, I do use an approach called motivational interviewing as well as cognitive behavioral therapy, but it's using those approaches and helping them discover for themselves, okay, this is the thing that's triggering me. This
wow.
is the thing that's contributing to how I'm feeling. And once you identify that, then I can work with the individual to discover, right, the right plan and individualized way that works most powerfully for them. Right, but it does
powerful.
Start there.
Very powerful. Mr. Mancini, what else do you have in the studio?
Yeah, let me get you one more, and then I'll get you back to the interview, and we'll come back at the 8:25 mark, 11:25 your time out there in Pittsburgh. But Albert from Poway said, you know, what causes stress sometimes in his life is you don't have enough work, activities, you have to change your life, and the experience is you deal with hate and abuse. Wow, that's a very interesting one with stress.
Susan, do you
yeah.
want to handle that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about stress is caused by your external experiences, right, and what happens to you. And, you know, one of the most significant is, yeah, dealing with hatred and abuse, it can be traumatic.
Wow.
Right? And
yes.
trauma is, you know, can be a key factor in inducing stress, anxiety. And even, you know, that can evolve into depression as well.
Sure. And, you know, with hate and abuse, you know, if that's occurring at the workplace, no doubt that makes burnout even worse, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, what it makes me think of, and I know that this is not a luxury that everyone has, but when we're talking about situations like that, if you can and if at all possible, changing your environment is the fastest and most crucial way, right, to start healing it, helping
yes.
yourself heal. Yeah.
Beautiful. And, you know, I'd like to let our listeners know that we do have Susan Urimoto here. She's a board-certified holistic practitioner, and I want to get into your holistic wellness coaching. She's given us excellent information, and as we get toward the end of the program, we'll get her contact information as well. And, Susan, are you writing a new book?
I'm actually not writing a new book. We're actually creating a new program that we're getting ready to launch in September. And so it's an online life program that people can enroll in, and its aim is to help people that may be either considering a career transition. Maybe you have lost your work in the environment or decided on your own volition to walk away, like we were just talking about, actually. But it's helping you develop the skills to, you know, redirect your career, find that job that you really dream about landing, to be able to do that more easily in half the time. So that's the program that we're getting ready to launch. And it's a combination of, you know, that inner work and, you know, cultivating your confidence and dealing with your emotions as you're making these transitions. But there's a lot of tactical approaches. So I'm collaborating with, you know, a professional resume writer and job strategist as well as a recruiter. So it's the inner and outer work.
Yeah, I would like you back on the show then in September to talk about that and launching that, if you'd be willing to do that.
Oh, it would be my pleasure. It would be my pleasure. It's so important.
Mr. Mancini, we'll keep that in mind and we'll get back in touch. You know, tell me about your life coaching situation. What do you do? What is done? What is the goal of that type of education that you have, but also wellness coaching for your patients? You know, what things are you definitely dealing with?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I have to share with you that my specialty and it is, and my focus is emotional health and wellness. And I've had the privilege of supporting and mentoring over 200 young adults who struggle with stress, anxiety, and self-doubt, right, that's really holding them hostage in their lives. So I help them learn how to manage stress and overcome anxiety and reclaim their confidence so they can, you know, move past the fear, knowing deep down they have what it takes to just, you know, reach their fullest potential. So that's what I specialize in. And the way that I do that, again, as a holistic health practitioner, it's really supporting people identify in that approach that I shared, right, that motivational interviewing, gain greater clarity on what their biggest challenge is and what might be holding them back, and then focusing on that mind-body connection to come up with an individualized solution for them to help them, you know, work the fastest for them. So as an example, right, it might include if I'm working with someone with anxiety and stress and they really want to boost their self-esteem and confidence, it might be an integrative approach that might include stress and anxiety management skills, how to change their mindset and their lifestyle, helping them create their own behavioral changes to have healthier behavior. It might be working with them on their, you know, nutritional fundamentals to help enhance their emotional resilience. It's a wide toolkit, Greg. It's a very broad toolkit.
Well, it sounds like you have a lot of tools in your toolkit, though, and that's the good part. You know, with regard to, if we could talk about process, you know, in your professional life, and what I mean by that, with regard to a patient coming to see you, and if it is a young adult, 20, 21 years old, you know, with regard to sitting down with them, do you start with, of course, questions, questionnaires? You know, how do you start this process of communicating? You know, Susan, if I could just elaborate, in medicine, and I'm a surgeon, you know, we talk about the four pillars, and those pillars being, number one, it's the history, it's the communication piece. The second piece is our examination piece, where, you know, the physician examines the patient, touches the patient, looks at the pathological areas. The third pillar are diagnostic tests, whether they're ultrasound, CT, MRI, you know, those kind of things. The fourth pillar, of course, is decision-making based on the history, physical exam, our diagnostic testing, and then, of course, we do our decision-making or treatment. What do we do? How do you do it? Would you incorporate the four pillars in how you deal with your patients?
Yeah, as you describe that, Greg, it sounds very similar, right? There's a lot of similarities. What I would share is I do sit down with people and I offer complimentary consultations. I don't ask the clients typically that I work with to fill out, you know, questionnaires or any documents. And the reason that I don't is because I just don't know at that stage. If you're in the depths of burnout or anxiety or maybe even depression, the energy to kind of consider those questions and fill out a form may not be there. So I have these free consults so that I can, you know, essentially do what a questionnaire might do, right? But do it in conversation. People tend to have a bit more energy for conversation. So I do ask questions about their challenges, like ask them what they feel like is most challenging for them. And it might start at this very vague statement of, I just don't have energy, but that's a good starting point, right? And then I ask them more questions about how is that affecting, tell me more about that low energy. How is that affecting your day to day? And so then the individual will start telling me about their life, you know, and that's where we can discover, is it affecting, in addition to their emotional life, is it affecting their relationships? Is it affecting their work? You can start to dig in to understand how pervasive is this? And then it's a question of, you know, how do you want to feel instead? What's the outcome that you prefer? And this is just to see if the individual has that ability to see a way out, to see something different, right, versus engaging to see if they're in hopelessness, right? And then from there, right, we go on with the evaluation and how do we approach this and support them.
And, you know, excellent. And, you know, with regard to, say, this interview technique, how do you document all this? You know, what's your process? You know, how do you document the things about this patient? Are you taking notes? Are you recording this? You know, how do you do this for, again, further review? Because sometimes it's hard to remember everything a patient says. You know, logistically, how do you control that in your practice?
Yeah, it's a blend of both. So for the people that I meet with, and, you know, since COVID, over half of the clients, in fact, I'd say 80% of the clients that I support are happening over teleconference,
Zoom.
And so if the client is willing to have the recording, I will record our conversation and offer them to share it back to them, so that they have that information for themselves. If they're not comfortable with that, because not everyone is, I absolutely take copious written notes. And what I do for every single client, whether it's video conference that's recorded or not, I will send them a summary of the conversation as well as where we landed on the resolution for them. You know, and quite honestly, Greg, and this might be unusual, and I know that not every, you know, holistic practitioner does this, but, you know, sometimes I'm with someone and we're scheduled for an hour session and they might be on a verge of a breakthrough. I will not end the session at the hour. I will stay with them for that a little bit of extra time if I know that they're on the verge of that breakthrough until they come to that breakthrough in the session.
Excellent. That's really customizing, you know, your treatment time with that patient, depending on what they need. That's super.
Yeah,
you know, excellent.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Susan, you have a lot of tools at your disposal. You know, if we can, again, we're getting close to the end of our hour here. But, Susan, you know, tell me a little bit about the cognitive behavior therapy, positive psychology, and then Psych-K. Could we summarize a little bit of that, letting our listeners know what tools you have available and what is available?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning all of those modalities that, you know, I'm trained and certified in. They all three of those have the same thing in common, and this is different than, you know, perhaps what a psychotherapist would do. So with my practice, you know, psychotherapists tend to look at someone's history and their past in order to identify that original wound, in order to heal them and help them with their behaviors today. With the modalities that I use that you mentioned, I start with what are the behaviors and emotions and how are they feeling today. So we start from the present and then move them towards where they want to be and how they want to feel in the future. So it's very much a present to the future type of look.
Present time.
Yeah, it starts with where they are right now. So there's a little bit of asking about maybe some past events, but we don't really spend a lot of time there versus the other modalities. And then with the Psych-K, it's a modality of energy psychology. And it goes back to what I mentioned about really working with the mind and body together. So it's energy psychology is a newer field of psychology, and it's based on the theory that mental health and physical health conditions are related to, you know, the electrical current that's running through our body, right? And that electricity is that electricity that's required for the nervous system to send signals through our body and our brain, right? Maybe making it possible to move, think, and feel. Yeah, so in this energy psychology, we believe interventions to regulate the electrical signal can be combined with, you know, evidence-based exposure therapy to retrain your brain and reprogram your mind. So Psych-K is a transformative energy psychology modality. It's simple. It's non-invasive, right? It offers a direct pathway to altering, you know, self-limiting beliefs that are rooted in the subconscious mind. And quite honestly, that's the very source of our behavior, is our belief in our subconscious. Yeah, it's supported by, it's supported by scientific research. It's been around for over 30 years. And Psych-K as a modality has impacted, you know, tens of thousands of lives. It's been around for a while.
Fantastic. You know, again, along the lines of what you're doing, you know, I know you're very successful at what you do. Just a question, you know, along those lines. How do you measure your results? You know, how do you know that you took a patient from a situation, a lot of emotional stress, anxiety, and things have gotten far better? Are you able to measure that pathway, that result, to go ahead and, again, let them know that, you know, we were at point A, now you're at point C, and you're doing fantastic? How do you measure all that? You know, is there a measurable?
I love the question, Greg. And I feel we can measure, and it really comes down to the clients that I work with. It's really what they're sharing on how they recognize where they were when we started and how they're feeling now. And, you know, there's so many client success stories that I have, and I have these, you know, wonderful clients that are willing because, you know, once they get on the other side of their emotional health challenges, they really want to share and inspire others to say, oh, my gosh, look what you can do, right? And so it's really about that client story. I have clients that had been struggling with depression off and on for years, right?
Yes.
And then within a matter of, you know, 6 months, right, they come to this place where they've learned how to self-regulate their emotions and they have, like, habits established, right, to manage their emotions. So they go from, I haven't been able to really get out of bed for X amount of period of time, and I've been struggling to work, to I have a client that just started her own business, and she's got, you know, venture capitalists investing in her business. So she went from a period of depression, not working, to, okay, I feel so good now, I'm confident and emotionally healthy, I've started this business.
Tremendous. What a turnaround that is.
Extreme
and,
turnaround.
You know, with regard to, you know, with your counseling, and do you call it counseling or what do you call what you do? What are the terms, you know, that you call what you do?
Yeah, I call it emotional wellness coaching, what I call it.
Okay. And, you know, with that, how long does it take? I know it's probably very individualistic. Are we talking clients who are in this circumstance for months, and then we need maintenance down the road? Or what's kind of a long-term view of what you do in helping your patients? It's not they come in for an infection, we give them an antibiotic, and they're over and done. You know, it seems to me it may take more time to get the results you want but then you worry about backsliding.
Yeah, and I love that you said it really depends on the individual, because it also depends on not just the individual, but also the support plan that we put in place, what
yes.
they choose, right? The modalities that they feel comfortable with and that we choose to apply in their situation. So what I will tell you is that the longest that I've worked with a client, meaning where it was this consistent work to get them to that breakthrough point,
yes.
is probably 13 months, right? So we're not
okay.
talking 5 years
That's not
of
a
therapy
long time.
Here. We're talking,
yeah.
right? We're talking months. And that would probably be on the extreme end. On average, I would say that it's anywhere from 3 to 6 months has been
fantastic.
The average. And especially if I work with them with Psych-K, with the energy psychology modality, it definitely is that, like, 3 months, more so that 3 months.
My God,
mark.
That's tremendous. A very short time in our lives to handle
yeah.
such a serious problem that maybe they've been facing for maybe more than 12 months, 15 months, 2 or 3 years. That's tremendous. And,
yes.
you know, Susan, with regard to ongoing education with you and with your mind and your skills, what do you do for ongoing education? How do you maintain quality of what you do but keep up to date with what's going on in the world?
Oh, yeah, thanks for asking that. I mean, ongoing education, it's just a key part of my job. You know, we can talk about the structure of being board certified, where I'm required to have 36 hours of ongoing education,
oh, sure,
right?
I agree.
Every year, I will say that I surpass that just because of my own interest. But it's things like, you know, and I'm experiencing that now, it's things like advancing my skills with the latest research on how our nutrition and the foods that we eat are really medicine that can help us with our
yes.
physical and emotional health. So I'm in classes for that right now to enhance the knowledge base of Ayurvedic medicine that I already have. It's, you know, just constant research. I would probably tell you, Greg, that I spend, you know, a full day a week in doing research and advancing
wow.
the knowledge base. Yeah, a full
you know,
day a week.
Do you realize what a gift that is to your patients to have?
No, thank you for saying so. Thank you for saying so. It's that thing where it's like with anything that you're passionate about, any subject matter and anything that you're doing, you're going to be compelled and inspired to spend time, right, in it and understanding it and knowing it well. Yeah. So it really is my passion.
Well, we just lost him for a minute, Susan, so he should be right back up with about 6 minutes to go. And as we, you know, get ready to bring him back in here, I got some questions coming out of Pompano Beach. Billy, more or less listening to the show, he says, great show as always. Keep up the great work, you guys. And he loves you as the guest and the guests that keep coming through here. Basically says, how do you deal with losing a loved one? He had lost his kid at an early age. How do you reach out to those type of problems that people go through, depression and stuff? Great question.
It is a great question. And grief, and, you know, and I really am with you with your loss, right, and feeling you. Grief and loss, it's one of the major emotional challenges that an individual can have in their life. And I think the important thing is, you know, it's the recognize how you're feeling, because you want to acknowledge that emotion of grief and loss versus try to ignore it and suppress it, right? So the first thing is to acknowledge it, which just sounds like what they're doing. And then it's doing your best to build the resilience, I call it, right? By pay attention, and one way to do that, to build your resilience, is pay attention to your thoughts, right? What thoughts
Excellent.
Are you having about that loss? And
Excellent.
Reframe your thoughts, yeah, and help you begin to regain that sense of, you know, understanding about the loss of your loved one. Sorry, I feel like you got Greg back.
You have any more questions, Mark?
Yeah, let me take one more, and we're getting down under the five-minute mark. But Joey from Bucks County, PA, coming in and more or less says, with marriage, sitting with two people, is it more or less a one-on-one thing? Because then the blame game starts coming up, more or less defend and deflect. I was married at one time, and I went through that, and it just didn't seem to work. How do you break that down when you're dealing with a couple that's going through these things? I think the first thing is, more or less, is the lack of communication.
Yeah, let me be really clear. So I do not do couples therapy, but that being said, I've supported individuals that are part of a relationship that is struggling, right, or nearing a separation and a breakdown. And how I typically support people with that is it's about looking within themselves first, right? So all the work is about yourself. It's not about the other person. It's not about expecting the other person or your outside circumstance to change in order for you to feel calmer and more centered and more in control. It starts with you. So it is very much about the questions that I tend to ask people of what is the greatest challenges, right? What are the thoughts and emotions that are coming up? How does this make me feel is a question to ask yourself in those to start unpacking, right? What is it within you that is feeling closed off that you can change and transform, right? To open yourself up and show up in the better in the relationship.
Unbelievable.
Do you ever get involved in couples counseling or, you know, having each member of the relationship there to discuss these things, or is that out of the scope of what you do?
Yeah, thanks for that clarifying question. It is, couples counseling is out of the scope of what I do. I work with individuals, right? So I either do one-on-ones. Most of my practice is one-on-ones, or I might have, like we talked about before, I have a couple of live group programs, but the groups are people that are struggling with the same challenge. So it might be anxiety or, right, confidence issues, but it's not couples. It is not couples counseling.
Okay.
Yeah, just to be clear.
Very good. So we know that basically you're working with the individual themselves, trying to improve the quality of their life, that then they can make their life better with other people that they have relationships with.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And as we're on the topic, I also feel like it's important for me to really be clear that, you know, I am not a medical professional that diagnoses or treats diseases, right? So if as we're talking about the symptoms, like if you're feeling like, you know what, I'm not sure if it's burnout or could this be clinical depression, I really encourage people to seek a formal diagnosis from your medical professional. Okay.
Surely. And are there times, Susan, you would refer to a psychiatrist or a psychologist to get additional help in dealing with the patient? Is that out of the scope of what you do, or is that something you would consider?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I have occasions where I will refer people to a psychiatrist or to a licensed therapist, and also, you know, quite often I complement medical care, right? So clients that come to me may already be under that type of care, and I complement it by coaching these clients through lifestyle changes that are prescribed by their physician or therapist, by enabling that accountability and that motivation within them to stick to the plan and help them make it a habit.
So, right, it's a matter of having a team approach to solving some of these very difficult problems. And, you know, I think you're correct that it's not just one professional sometime that can solve these problems. It does take somewhat of a team that interacts different facets of a person's life. Mark, I'd like to have Susan. Susan, do you want to summarize what you do for us as we close the program? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Yeah, absolutely. So what I would say is, here's what I do. You know how there's some adults who struggle, young adults who struggle with overwhelming self-doubt and anxiety that's really holding them back from enjoying their life, right, and pursuing the goals that they have in their lives. That's where I step in, right? So I can help you empower yourself to manage the stress and conquer anxiety and rediscover your confidence, right, to help you learn how to move past these fears, because the fears and the stress will never go away. It's a part of life, but it's a matter of having them be moments in your life versus stretching out into days and weeks and months.
Excellent.
Wow.
And Susan, Mark, we'll just ask her, get a hold of you, Susan, if they'd like to communicate with you.
Yeah, thanks for asking. There's two ways. So you can email me directly, and my email address is susan@beliefstransformed.com. That's our business, Beliefs Transformed. You can also visit us on our website, learn a little bit more about that energy modality site, Kay, and more about what we do, and that's www.beliefstransformed.com.
And, man, oh, man, we got to get her back for another one, Doc.
Yes.
We wrap this up. I know you're in Pittsburgh with your great staff that's out there. Let everybody
Thank
know
you.
How they can get a hold of you and that great staff in the city.
Yes.
Of Bridges.
Again, as always, GJRMD 308 at Outlook.com. We're here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mark Mancini, L.A., thank you very much. Susan Oromoto, thank you again. Mark, finish it up.
And I can't wait for next week. Rotator cuff injuries, Matt Varicello and J.C. Burkett coming in, so that ought to be a good one. And also can't wait for Susan on a part two of this thing. Boy, it just keeps picking up steam. For Susan Yamamoto out there in Northern California, Doc out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly in Los Angeles, catch up at the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Tell all your friends. Thanks for listening, and have a blessed and safe weekend. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening.